I used to teach on this subject repeatedly. But this country was founded on a social contract. I think maybe one of the greatest fulfillments of the truth of Romans 13, that the powers that be are ordained of God. This nation was and still is unique. I talked with a federal judge who's a very close friend about the work presently going on in the forming of the constitution for the Armenian nation. And we have insisted and are constantly dealing with third world nations as a country, hoping to have a democratic nation come forth like America after the revolution. But God put a bunch of geniuses on hand at the close of the American Revolution, schooled in the concept of Rutherford's writings, Rex Lex, or Lex Rex. Is the king the law, or is the law the king? John Locke's concept of a social contract. And this country was allowed to come into existence only after recognizing the Bill of Rights. And the formation of the Constitution was one of the most publicly debated, thoroughly discussed development by intelligent people on all sides of the issue ever to occur in human history. And that's what's lacking in the third world countries or the formation of a new government in Russia. And one of the sources recently put out in two prize little volumes, The Debate on the Constitution, including copies of the Federalist Papers, arguments in the various state constitutional meetings, debates by the leaders who were putting the country together. I want to read something to you tonight, just for fun. You ready for this?
Yes, sir.
It's in Volume 2, by Benjamin Franklin, to the editor of the Federal Gazette in Philadelphia, April 8, 1788. We had people like this. You've already noticed you, and you've been looking in the cathedral at the Jefferson Bible and spent some time on the rich religious heritage of Jefferson. And this is Benjamin Franklin to the editor. A zealous advocate for the proposed federal constitution. Now, these were debates and arguments and letters and public discussion before the adoption of the Constitution by the colonies and the Confederacy of States. A zealous advocate for the proposed federal Constitution in a certain public assembly said that, quote, the repugnance of a great part of mankind to good government was such that he believed that if an angel from heaven was to bring down a constitution formed there for our use, it would nevertheless meet with violent opposition. He was reproved for the supposed extravagance of the sentiment, and he did not justify it. Probably it might not have immediately occurred to him that the experiment had been tried, and that the event was recorded in the most faithful of all histories, the Holy Bible. Otherwise, he might, as it seems to me, have supported his opinion by that unexceptionable authority. The Supreme Being had been pleased to nourish up a single family by continued acts of his attentive providence till it became a great people. And having rescued them from bondage by many miracles performed by his servant Moses, he personally delivered to that chosen servant in the presence of the whole nation a constitution and code of laws for their observance, accompanied and sanctioned with promises of great rewards and threats of severe punishments as the consequence of their obedience or disobedience. This constitution, though the deity himself was to be at its head, and it is therefore called by political writers a theocracy, could not be carried into execution but by the means of his ministers. Therefore, Aaron and his sons were commissioned to be, with Moses, the first established ministry of the new government. One would have thought that this appointment of men who had distinguished themselves by procuring the liberty of their nation and had hazarded their lives in openly opposing the will of a powerful monarch who would have retained that nation in slavery might have been an appointment acceptable to a grateful people, and that a constitution framed for them by the deity himself might on that account have been secure of a universal welcome reception. Yet there were in every one of the 13 tribes some discontented, restless spirits who were continually exciting them to reject the proposed new government, and this from various motives. Many still retained an affection for Egypt, the land of their nativity, and these, whenever they felt any inconvenience or hardship, though the natural and unavoidable effect of their change of situation, exclaimed against their leaders as the authors of their trouble, and were not only for returning into Egypt, but for stoning their deliverers. Those inclined to idolatry were displeased that their golden calf was destroyed. Many of the chiefs thought the new constitution might be injurious to their particular interests, that the profitable places would be engrossed by the families and friends of Moses and Aaron, and others equally well-born excluded. In Josephus and the Talmud, we learn some particulars not so fully narrated in the Scripture. We are told, quote, that Korah was ambitious of the priesthood and offended that it was conferred on Aaron, and this, as he said, by the authority of Moses only, without the consent of the people. He accused Moses of having, by various artifices, fraudulently obtained the government and deprived the people of their liberties, and of conspiring with Aaron to perpetuate the tyranny in their family. Thus, though Korah's real motive was the supplanting of Aaron, he persuaded the people that he meant only the public good, and they, moved by his insinuations, began to cry out, "Let us maintain the common liberty of our respective tribes. We have freed ourselves from the slavery imposed on us by the Egyptians. And shall we now suffer ourselves to be made slaves by Moses?" Only if you know some revolutionary history and the charges against the founders will this have its full eloquent bite. If we must have a master, it were better to return to Pharaoh, who at least fed us with bread and onions, than to serve this new tyrant, who by his operations has brought us into danger of famine. Then they called in question the reality of his conference with God and objected the privacy of the meetings and the preventing of the people from being present at the colloquies or even approaching the place as grounds of great suspicion. They accused Moses also of peculation, as embezzling part of the golden spoons and the silver chargers that the princes had offered at the dedication of the altar, and the offerings of gold by the common people, as well as most of the poll tax or tithe. And Aaron they accused of pocketing much of the gold of which he pretended to have made a molten calf. Besides peculation, they charged Moses with ambition, to gratify which passion he had, they said, deceived. We're going through a station break, but I don't intend to interrupt myself, or much less interrupt Benjamin Franklin. And announcers, you don't have to make station breaks at the half hour. You do it on the hour. So just keep listening. They accused Moses also of peculation. See, you keep learning new words every day. You look at that at first glance, that sounds like a dirty word. God knows what your imagination attributed to that charge until Franklin goes on to explain it. They accused Moses also of peculation, as embezzling part of the golden spoons and the silver chargers that the princes had offered at the dedication of the altar, as narrated in Numbers chapter 7, and the offering of the gold by the common people, which said offering is cataloged in Exodus 35, verse 22. And I won't give you the rest of the quotations, but Franklin knew his Bible. As well as most of the poll tax. And Aaron, they accused of pocketing much of the gold of which he pretended to have made a molten calf. Besides peculation, they charged Moses with ambition, to gratify which passion he had, they said, deceived the people by promising to bring them to a land flowing with milk and honey, instead of doing which he had brought them from such a land. And that he thought light of all this mischief, provided he could make himself an absolute prince. I am going to quote, because Franklin quotes in a footnote, Numbers 16, verse 13, quote, "Is it a small thing," the people were saying to Moses, "that thou hast brought us up out of a land that floweth with milk and honey, to kill us in the wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us?" End quote. That to support the new dignity with splendor in his family, the partial poll tax already levied and given to Aaron, the tithe, was to be followed by a general one, another tithe, which would probably be augmented from time to time if he were suffered to go on promulgating new laws on pretense of new occasional revelations of the divine will, till their whole fortunes were devoured by that aristocracy. Moses denied the charge of peculation, and his accusers were destitute of proofs to support it, though facts, if real, are in their nature capable of proof. I have not, said he, with holy confidence in the presence of his God, I have not taken from this people the value of an ass. Nor done them any other injury. But his enemies had made the charge, and with some success among the populace, for no kind of accusation is so readily made or easily believed by knaves as the accusation of knavery. I don't want to read that again. But his enemies had made the charge, and with some success among the populace, for no kind of accusation is so readily made or easily believed by knaves as the accusation of knavery. In fine, no less than 250 of the principal men, quote, famous in the congregation, men of renown, end quote, heading and exciting the mob, worked them up to such a pitch of frenzy that they called out, "Stone 'em! Stone 'em! And thereby secure our liberties. And let us choose other captains that they may lead us back into Egypt in case we do not succeed in reducing the Canaanites." On the whole, it appears that the Israelites were a people jealous of their newly acquired liberty, which jealousy was in itself no fault. But when they suffered it to be worked upon by artful men, pretending public good, with nothing really in view but private interest, they were led to oppose the establishment of the new Constitution, whereby they brought upon themselves much inconvenience and misfortune. It appears further from the same inestimable history that when after many ages that Constitution was become old and much abused, and an amendment of it was proposed, the populace, as they had accused Moses of ambition of making himself a prince, and cried out, "Stone him, stone him," so, excited by their high priests and scribes, they exclaimed against the Messiah that he aimed at becoming king of the Jews, and cried out, "Crucify him, crucify him." From all which we may gather that popular opposition to a public measure is no proof of its impropriety, even though the opposition be excited and headed by men of distinction. To conclude, I beg I may not be understood to infer that our general convention was divinely inspired, though I would, when it formed the new federal constitution, merely because that constitution has been unreasonably and vehemently opposed. Yet I must own I have so much faith in the general government of the world by providence that I can hardly conceive a transaction of such momentous importance to the welfare of millions now existing and to exist in the posterity of a great nation should be suffered to pass without being in some degree influenced, guided, and governed by that omnipotent, omnipresent, and beneficent ruler in whom all inferior spirits live and move and have their being. Not bad for one of the fathers of our country. These two books are full of debates, full of the debates on the Constitution, but I thought you'd enjoy another page in the chapter of religious convictions and the profound recognition by Benjamin Franklin that that event was at the very least overseen by the divine ruler of the universe. We're a fortunate people that God had on the scene the men who brought this country into existence And it's a tragedy that we have lost such leadership as the pragmatic generation that lets the end justify the means, now provides the candidates for rulership in this country, who treat the Constitution as an enemy and something to be changed to make their modern desires more convenient.